The good ship Mary Mrs. Trustpot was still chugging steadily down the dark, soft-drink river, keeping a careful equal distance from both banks. They appeared to have made good progress during the night, and were now in unfamiliar territory. A whole regiment of sailor dolls had been carefully crippled and disfigured, and then crucified in long rows the length of a hillside. There were hundreds of the crosses, stretching up the hill to the very top, where one sailor doll, presumably the leader, had been crucified upside down, and then set on fire. Thankfully, after that, trees and shrubbery began to appear along the banks, thickening into trailing woods that hid the killing fields from view. The day grew slowly warmer, hot enough to raise a sweat without actually being uncomfortable. The humans lay sprawled in deck chairs, watching the quiet scenery go by, waited on by Halloweeny, who couldn't do enough for them. The long day passed slowly, warm and pleasant and undemanding, just as it must have been in the early days of Shannon's dream. Some of the humans were actually dozing when the ship passed into disputed territory, and everything went to hell in a hurry. The toys had crept through the trees, keeping to the shadows, silent and unobserved, and then slipped quietly into the dark waters of the river. They swam deep beneath the surface, not needing to breathe, and then climbed the sides of the ship, unseen by any. Until they came swarming over the guardrails, waving swords and axes and screaming curses against humanity. They were colorful, jagged figures, composed of different colored parts and components, bodies, limbs, and heads of different colors and types that a child could fit together to make a whole. The humans sprang to their feet, shock and alarm driving out their drowsiness. They just had time to draw their swords, and then the toys were upon them. Finley and Evangeline stood together, back to back, hacking at the toys as they came within range. Giles was caught and cornered in the bow, but stood his ground, his heavy sword shearing through the patchwork bodies with ease. He fought calmly and economically, conserving his strength and refusing to be intimidated by the sheer numbers ranged against him. Toby and Flynn put a stateroom wall at their backs and built a barricade of deck chairs, from behind which they could fire their disruptors, blowing great holes in the packed crowd of toys. Flynn's camera hovered overhead, covering the action. Julian tried to form his mind for a psi blast, but just the effort was enough to cripple him with a blinding headache. He fell to his knees, blood spilling thickly from his nose and mouth. Halloweeny grabbed him by an arm and dragged him with desperate strength into the stateroom, shutting the door and then pushing heavy furniture against it. He hovered over Julian for a moment, distraught at the sight of a human bleeding and in distress, and then he grabbed an iron poker from beside the fireplace and stood before the barricaded door, determined that no one would pass while he still had strength in his bony arms. Bruin Bear and the Sea Goat were as much targets as the humans, and fought side by side. The goat had produced a large club from somewhere and wielded it with great authority and a certain amount of glee. The bear's claws had burst out of his paws again, and he tore through the attacking toys with a cold, methodical fury. Pooji had also sprouted terrifying teeth and claws, and was tearing a vicious path through the packed crowd of toys filling the deck. Up on the bridge, the captain yelled curses in defiance, and tried to increase the paddle steamer's speed to leave behind those toys still in the water. As yet, none of the patchwork toys had reached the bridge, but the captain had a long cutlass ready for when they did. Finley was fighting at the peak of his powers, rested and strong and deadly, and no one toy could stand against him. But there were so many of them, and not even a man who had been the undefeated masked gladiator of the Golgotha arenas could stand for long against an army. Evangeline guarded his back with savage determination, doing her best to wield a sword as he had taught her. The barricade around Toby and Flynn was slowly but steadily being dismantled, despite all their efforts. It was becoming clear to the two newsmen that they had allowed themselves to be trapped in a corner from which there was no escape. They struck out with their swords, reluctantly becoming part of the story they were covering. Giles Deathstalker stood alone at the bow, surrounded by furious howling toys, with no way out. He fought hard and well, slowly tiring, but still strong. The toys surged forward, screaming horribly, their artificial voices full of rage and anticipation, swords and axes raised to hack him into pieces that would never reform. And rage and desperation flooded through Giles, igniting the maze-given forces within him. Power blazed up in the back brain, the undermind, shining so very brightly through parts of his mind he'd never used before, and suddenly, Giles was somewhere else. He stood on the bridge, next to the startled captain, while down below the toys overran the bow where he'd been and stared stupidly about them, wondering where their trapped prey had gone. Giles laughed suddenly. He'd teleported. He could feel the new ability settling into place within him, as easy and natural now to him as breathing, and couldn't help wondering what other abilities he might manifest in times of need. He looked down at the swarming toys and smiled unpleasantly as he began to plan what to do next with his new power. On the bridge, the captain staggered back and forth on his peg legs, swinging his cutlass with more strength than skill. Only a few toys had reached him so far, but he could hear more on their way. The parrot fluttered in their faces, screaming abuse, distracting them. With no one's hands on the wheel, the ship drifted aimlessly, heading for the bank. Down below, anything had turned into his most martial shape and was cutting through the mass toys with razor-sharp hands. Pooji had become a snarling fury of hate and destruction, no longer cartoon-like at all. He fought tirelessly in the center of the deck and defied one and all to bring him down. In the stateroom, Halloweeny hovered helplessly over Julian. Toys were hammering against the door, slowly forcing it open and pushing the piled-up furniture back inch by inch. Toys were trying to get through the windows. Halloweeny ran back and forth, pushing them back out. And then the barricade of furniture suddenly collapsed and fell backwards, and the door swung open, and the toys came howling in. Halloweeny ran forward to stand between them and the human, but there were so many, and he was just a little skeleton boy. He went down under their stamping feet, his bones cracking and breaking, crying out for Julian to run. The young Esper tried to get his feet under him and lurched forward to help his small defender. Swords and axes rose above him. There was a clap like thunder and a rush of displaced air. And Giles Deathstalker appeared out of nowhere in the middle of the stateroom. The patchwork toys fell back, unnerved by the sudden appearance, and Giles moved forward and hauled Julian to his feet. And in that moment, while the toys hesitated, Giles reached out with his maze-altered mind and slammed into Julian's. There was a moment of opposition as the young Esper realized what the Deathstalker meant to do, and then Giles swept it aside, seized control of Julian's Esp, and summoned up a Psystorm. Julian screamed horribly, the sound rising above the roar of battle, and everyone hesitated a moment. And then it was as though a great wind swept the length of the boat, picking up the patchwork toys and pitching them overboard. Others were torn apart, reduced to their component parts, and scattered by the wind. Some simply exploded, touched by the storm fire crackling across the deck, spitting and seething. The humans stood and watched in awe, untouched by the power of the storm. The storm shut off as suddenly as it began. And all was still on the ship again. Apart from the agonized screaming from the stateroom and Halloweeny calling desperately for help, the humans and the toys forgot about their sudden victory and their various wounds and ran to the stateroom, pushing their way in past the half-open door and the scattered furniture. And there they found Halloweeny dragging his broken body painfully across the floor, trying to reach Julian Sky, convulsing in Giles Deathstalker's arms. The Esper screams were growing hoarser, as though the horrid sounds were damaging his throat. Giles dropped Julian and backed away, his eyes cold and watchful.
Don't let him get away! He did it! He hurt Julian! He did something to him and Julian started screaming and couldn't stop!
Finley and Evangeline moved quickly forward to kneel beside the young Esper. His whole body was convulsing now, his heels drumming on the floor. His head whipped from side to side, blood spraying from his mouth as he screamed. Evangeline sat him up and cradled him in her arms, trying to contain his helpless movements. Finley tried to check Julian for wounds, but it was clear to his arena-trained eyes that the damage had to be internal. The Esper's struggles grew weaker as the strength went out of him, and his screams died away to groans. There was blood leaking from his ears and dribbling down his cheeks from his eyes, like dark crimson tears. His skin was deathly pale and icy to the touch. Finley glared at Giles.
What the hell did you do to him?
What was necessary? We needed a psi storm. It was our only chance for survival. So I helped the Esper produce one.
You knew it might kill him.
Yes, I knew. But it was necessary.
Then if he dies, you're a murderer.
He wouldn't be my first victim. Grow up, woman. We're in a war here. The survival of the group has to come first. Our mission is more important than any one of us. And yes, that includes me.
Toby hurried in, carrying a small autodock disc from the ship's medbay. He handed it over to Finley, who pulled the Esper's collar back and slapped the flat disc against the side of his neck. Toby moved back to get out of the way of Flynn's hovering camera.
It's a pretty basic dock. I mean, it's good for tranquilizers, stabilizers, things like that. But don't ask me what it can do for cerebral hemorrhages and total body shock.
Julian's struggles slowly ceased as the drugs the doc was pumping into him finally took effect, and his groans died away to whispers. Evangeline rocked him gently, stroking his forehead and murmuring soothingly to him, like a mother with a sick child. He didn't look like he could hear her. Finley got to his feet and looked back at Halloweeny. Bruin Bear and the Sea Goat were trying to comfort the little skeleton boy. Both of his legs and most of his ribs had been smashed, the breaks showing clearly on his bare bones. There was a great crack in his skull, through which the glowing metals of his artificial mind could be seen. He was crying without tears. Pooji and Anything looked on helplessly from the doorway.
How is he? Can the damage be repaired?
Hopefully. He's an automaton, after all. We don't have any spare parts on board, but we can hold him together until we get back to Toystown. Your friend is dying, isn't he?
Yes, I think he probably is. He saved us all, but there's nothing we can do for him here.
The Deathstalker did this to him. He has unusual mental abilities. I saw him teleport. Perhaps he could use those abilities to undo what he did to the Esper.
Finley turned to look at Giles, who looked steadily back at him.
Well? You're supposed to have been through the marvelous maze on Hayden. Show us what you can do. That is why you're here, after all. To use your special powers. Heal him!
I don't know if I can.
Giles knelt down beside Evangeline. She glared at him, but let him take Julian from her arms. The Deathstalker held him with surprising gentleness, the Esper's head lolling back against Giles's chest. Blood dripped from the Esper's chin. His breathing was very faint. Giles closed his eyes, concentrating in a way that was still new to him, reaching out in a direction he couldn't name, but somehow knew was there. He could see Julian now as a dim light in the darkness, a guttering candle whose flame was slowly going out. Giles looked at himself and saw a light so blinding he could barely face it. And it was the easiest thing in the world for him to take some of that light and give it to Julian. The Esper sat up suddenly in the Deathstalker's arms, his eyes snapping open, sucking in a deep breath like a swimmer surfacing from a long dive. The bleeding had stopped, and his coloring had returned to normal. He looked around him, startled.
What the hell was that? It was like God called my name?
Trust me, God had nothing to do with it.
Finley looked at Giles.
How good a job did you do, Deathstalker? Is he healed?
I doubt it. I just... jump-started him again. Gave his batteries a boost. No, he's probably just back to how he was before I, interfered. I think I'll take a walk around the deck. Make sure there are no toy parts left on board. Get myself a little fresh air as well. It's getting a bit thick in here.
Giles headed for the stateroom door, and everyone stepped back to give him plenty of room. The bear looked at him thoughtfully.
You're not human anymore. I can tell. What are you, Giles Deathstalker?
Damned if I know.
And Giles left. Anything picked up Halloweeny and carried him out of the stateroom. Pooji, the bear, and the goat went with them, leaving the humans alone. Toby nodded to Flynn, and the camera floated down onto Flynn's shoulder and shut itself off.
So, what's the deal with the Deathstalker? There's nothing in his history or his legend about his having Esper abilities. Certainly no one else in his line has ever shown any trace of them. Until Owen. I saw him do some pretty amazing things on Mistworld.
It's the maze. The Madness Maze. Something Giles and Owen and a few others encountered on the world that used to be Hayden.
You mean they were changed by a Hayden Man device?
No, something much older. It changed the people who went through it, made them more than they used to be. Don't ask for details, because I don't have any. The Underground has, but it's all strictly need-to-know. And the likes of you and I don't need to know. Now turn off that camera and get the hell out of here, before I decide which of your bodily orifices to cram it into, sideways.
Fair enough. Let's go, Flynn.
After me. Giles Deathstalker was leaning on the starboard guardrail, staring into the dark waters of the river as they flowed past. The captain had the ship back under control again, and they were picking up speed, back on course. Giles wondered what he was becoming, and whether the end result would be in any way human. He also wondered why the thought didn't scare him as much as it should have. Raised angry voices caught his attention, and he went to see what was happening, more to keep his thoughts occupied than because he really cared. Down by the stern, Bruin Bear and the Sea Goat had found a disembodied head from a patchwork toy, wedged in a corner where the Psystorm couldn't get at it, and they were busy interrogating it by kicking it around like a football and shouting questions at it. Toby calmed them down, set the head against the stateroom wall, and asked it questions while Flynn filmed. All he got for his trouble were a series of not very inventive curses, so Giles moved in and took over. No one objected. He didn't think they would.
Why did you attack us?
The head was bright blue, with pointed ears and oversized eyes. It had probably been intended to look cute and elfish in the beginning, but now it looked more like a demon. It laughed at his question, showing jagged, pointy teeth. The sound was harsh, artificial, and had nothing of human emotion in it. The toy's eyes, all dark pupils, fixed on the Deathstalker.
You're the enemy! The eternal enemy! Humans and human lovers! Don't think you've won anything here! You can't get away! We'll find you and kill you all! Or the others will!
Others?
Oh, we have many friends waiting along the way for you. We know where you're from, where you're going. We have ears and eyes everywhere. You'll never reach the Red Man. We won't allow it.
What's your name?
Names? That's a human thing. Our identities interchange as our bodies do. We are lost to who we were, and we like it that way.
Tell me what you know about Harker. Tell me what you know about the Red Man and his plans, and why you're so determined to stop us getting to him.
I don't have to answer your questions.
I can make you talk.
Giles leaned forward slightly, staring into the head's dark eyes.
Look at me, toy.
His presence was suddenly overpowering, frightening, awful, as though something unexpected and horribly powerful had emerged from behind the mask of Giles's face. The bear and the goat shrank back, and Toby had to fight down the urge to do the same. Flynn's control over his camera wavered for a moment, but he kept filming. The head made a high, whining noise, a terrified, pitiful sound, like a child being tortured. Giles relaxed suddenly, and the overwhelming presence was gone, as suddenly as it had come. The head had its eyes squeezed shut.
All right, all right. We're scared of the Red Man. No one who goes to him ever comes back, ever. Even those most fanatical to our cause. From what we hear, he's building a private army of his own, deep in the forest. It said he's going to end the war. Or end the world. They say he's crazy. Crazy as only humans can be. And he's infecting toys with that madness. I know you humans. You'd try and reason with him, and you'd end up mad as he is. Mad as the Red Man. And who knows how powerful he'd become with more humans to help him. Humans as crazy as he is. So we're lying in wait all along the river. You'll never live to reach the forest.
We want to take him away. Take him off world with us. Isn't that what you want?
You're lying. Humans always lie. We know that. They said they loved us when they came here to play with us. But in the end, they always went away and left us behind. We were just toys to be used and discarded on a whim. They never loved us. You'll all pay for that!
I think we've heard enough. This is for Julian.
Giles picked up the head and pressed his thumbs firmly into its eyes. The huge eyeballs crunched inward, destroying the fragile instruments within. Giles pulled his thumbs out and tossed the screaming head over the rail and into the river. Be found and recovered by its fellows, or not. Giles looked at the others, but neither the humans nor the toys had anything to say. Giles put his back against the guardrail.
Not as helpful as I'd hoped. Did I miss anything pertinent?
Just the one, maybe. Why do you suppose they keep referring to Harker as the Red Man?
They say he's crazy. Dangerously crazy. Maybe the red is a reference to blood.
Now, why didn't I think of that?
And we're going to meet him, lucky old us.
Shut up, goat.
They continued on down the river, passing abandoned battlefields and dead toys. The war had been here and passed on. The constant rumble of explosions in the distance grew gradually louder, nearer. They passed playhouses, forts and castles, log cabins and rose-covered cottages, burnt out, torn apart, utterly destroyed. Signs of the war were everywhere now, as the paddle steamer drew nearer to the forest. And everywhere lay the broken bodies of dead toys, looking up at the sky with empty eyes. No way now to know whether they'd been good, bad, or indifferent. The ship sailed on as the day faded into the evening and then into night. They found an open field, apparently untouched by the war, and pulled in beside the riverbank. The humans felt a need for fresh air and the chance to stretch their legs. The toys didn't really understand, but went along with it. Though they hadn't said anything, it was clear their growing nearness to the forest was worrying them, and they were as glad of a pause in the journey as the humans were. They'd had to carry Julian off the ship. The boost Giles had given him had worn off, and his injuries hurt him more as the warmth went out of the day. But he seemed cheerful enough now, sitting as close to the fire as he could, toasting marshmallows on a stick. The bear and the goat sat on either side of him, trying to give support through their company. The goat kept burning his marshmallows because he was always too busy talking to pay them proper attention. The bear ate them anyway to keep the peace. Finley sat opposite them, with Evangeline at his side, as always. Toby and Flynn had 3 sticks each, and were stuffing their faces with marshmallows as fast as they could toast them. Toby kept Halloweeny busy, running back and forth, fetching them more. He was a little slower than he had been, with his new metal splints and staples holding his bones together, but he was happy as always to be of use. Giles sat a little apart from everyone, smoking an evil-smelling cigar, and saying nothing. He showed no interest in the marshmallows. Pooji, the friendly critter, also sat by himself, as though unsure he was really welcome. The captain and anything stayed on board the Merry Mrs. Trustpot to keep an eye on things, they said. And so everyone sat around the fire and ate marshmallows and sang songs and talked on into the night. And finally, they got around to the subject of childhood. Bruin Bear started it off. Finley had been talking about some of the stranger worlds he'd seen in his travels, and the bear asked what he made of Shannon's world, the planet intended for adult children. Finley frowned.
It's hard to tell what this place was really like before the war, but I think I can see the attraction. A place free of adult cares and worries, a chance to be a child again, to get childhood right, the way it should have been. Few childhoods are really happy, except for those with extremely selective memories. I was no good at being a child. I had no gift for it. I just wanted it to be over, so I could enter the much more interesting world that adults moved in. In Clan Campbell, like all clans, children are trained to be useful members of the family from a very early age. And a fighter, too, because my family had many enemies. And just by being born, I had become part of feuds and vendettas going back centuries. I took to that early. Too much so for my conservative parents, who feared a scandal if their designated son and heir killed anyone important in an unsanctioned duel. I never saw much of my parents. Dad was always off somewhere else, running the clan, taking care of family business, and Mother Dear preferred the social world to raising children. Typical clan parents. I had an endless series of nannies and tutors, determined to teach me the proper way of things, and try and keep me out of trouble. I didn't have many friends, real friends. Companions outside the family were discouraged, and inside the clan we were all too busy jockeying for position and influence. But I had toys, all the toys I could handle. I remember the stories of Bruin Bear and the Sea Goat, and their adventures in the Golden Lands. I used to dream of traveling with them into the lands beyond the sunset. And now here I am, traveling with them for real. Eerie.
Finley smiled across the fire at the toys.
You're just like I remember you. It's like meeting old friends I haven't seen in years. Maybe the only real friends I had as a child. No wonder so many people came here. To enjoy the childhood they wish they'd had. Or only had in dreams.
I envy you those dreams. I never had a childhood. As a clone, I came into this world fully grown. Born from cell scrapings from the original Evangeline. Daddy needed me to replace the daughter he'd murdered. So I was raised in secret. Told about a childhood I never had. And then sent out into the world to be an adult, even though I was only 6 months old. Most of what I see here is strange to me. I never had toys or pets. Daddy didn't want me to have anything in my life but him. I've never played, never been free of secrets and responsibilities. I see the toys here, and I don't know what to do with them, how to talk to them. Something in me wants to hold them or be held by them, or just to run and chase and laugh in the sunlight, as though it's something I always wanted and never knew it.
Evangeline stopped abruptly, unshed tears thickening her voice. Finley put his arm round her.
We're here for you. We'll always be here for you.
Hell, didn't anyone here have a normal childhood? Surely we didn't all come from dysfunctional families.
I had a great childhood.
Julian stopped and looked suspiciously at Flynn.
That camera is off, isn't it?
Trust me. I, of all people, understand the need for privacy on occasion. Speak freely,